Hello and welcome to BizNews TV. I'm Alec Hogg. Ever since his bombshell press conference in July, South Africans have been going gaga over the KZN police chief Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi. Well, his star has risen still further recently after polished performances at the Madlanga Commission and an ad hoc committee of parliament. The general's disclosures about our mafia state have captured the hearts and minds of a desperate and despondent public. At last, there's someone with power who's prepared to tell the truth. But for the rational mind, there are more than a few niggles. There's the way that senior South African police services staff are camped out at Mhlanga's plush Oyster Box Hotel. That's Mkhwanazi's remit. There's also the spendthrift use of a 600 million rand taxpayer-funded slush fund. And Mkhwanazi has levied some very serious allegations against Police Minister Senzo Mchunu and Deputy National Police Commissioner Shadrach Sibiya, both of whom were previously very widely praised and regarded as, well, among the few paragons of virtue in the public sector. Plus, serious accusations against DA firebrand Diane Kola-Barnard and NCC Member of Parliament Fidel Adams. The biggest niggle, though, is Mkhwanazi's 5 million rand defamation suit and subsequent very public allegations against crime fighter Paul O'Sullivan, a man regarded, previously anyway, by the nation as incorruptible. We'll hear from O'Sullivan in a moment, but before that, here's what Mkhwanazi said about the Forensics for Justice founder in Parliament this week.
Is Paul O'Sullivan a clean man? Or is an agent? So I think based on that investigation, we're able to conclude whether he's indeed a clean man or he is what has been said in public, an agent. If he's a clean man, why he does what he does? If he's an agent, who is he working for? But it is time that this country must not sit back and be run by Mr. Paul O'Sullivan. And if government fails to act on it, the men and women in this country, they're going to take it upon themselves to do something drastic on it.
Well, that's pretty hectic stuff. Paul O'Sullivan joins us now with, hey, Paul, how did you feel after hearing those comments from this national hero, the man that many want to be the president of South Africa? That's his standing at the moment.
Yeah, unfortunately, Mkhwanazi does have quite a cult following. And if you look at that cult following, it seems like he can do no wrong. But what they really need to do is open their minds. Your mind has to be like a parachute. If it's not open, it doesn't work. And now, if you look at the allegations that are made against myself by Mkhwanazi, they're totally false. But what he's done, in fact, is he's incited people to commit violence against me. To the effect that I'm now receiving threats on social media. So you're left wondering, what kind of a policeman is it that goes into Parliament and tells Parliament that if they don't take action against Paul O'Sullivan, the country needs to take its own action and it will be drastic action. Men and women of the country, he said. Now, that leaves me worried. I'm not worried about my own safety, obviously. Because I have the necessary security. But the allegations he makes, apart from inciting violence, he accuses him of me of being an agent. Now, I've heard that before. Jackie Celebi told the leaders, the church leaders of the country, who are you going to believe, a foreign agent or your president? And Jackie Celebi, I had opened cases against him for being corrupt. Now, it's a known fact that he was found guilty and he was sent to prison for 15 years for corruption. After the Jackie Celebi trials were finished, I decided to have a mopping up exercise and go after some of the crooks that had defended Jackie Slebby and had attacked me in the process. And I went after them. Now, that led to 2016, when we had Pashlani, the then acting chief of police, telling the country that I'm a foreign spy. So that's now the second person coming with this allegations. If I'm a foreign spy, I haven't done a very good job of keeping myself low profile. And I've been living in this country for longer than 60% of the occupants of this country have been alive. So I don't think it's fair to say I'm a foreign spy. When I came to this country, I came as a person of independent means. I had my own assets, and I invested in this country. And I invested solidly in this country. Now, some of my investments paid off, some of them didn't, but at the end of the day, I put my money where my mouth was. And I've since decided to disinvest. And my decision to disinvest in South Africa was taken several years ago after COVID and the power cuts and all the rest of it and the drop in the property prices. I disinvested and I've now started increasing my investments in other countries, in property portfolios. What we have to remember is that nobody pays me. I never got a cent. Nobody paid me for dealing with Jackie Slebby. I did it because I felt it was the right thing to do. Nobody paid me for taking on Pashlani and about 10 other generals in the police. I did it because I thought it was the right thing to do. Now there's a problem because I took on further activities. My wife said to me I should hang up my boots, but I decided to just have one final go. And I took on the people that were involved in the running what we call crime intelligence. The spiraling crime in South Africa should have been placed under control many years ago. And the reason it hasn't come under control is because the root of most of the evil in South African police service is based in crime intelligence. Crime intelligence is run by a bunch of criminals, and it has been run by a bunch of criminals for the last 20 years. And if we look at the media conference of General Nkunazi on the 6th of July, the whole focus of that media conference was that, and subsequent thereto, his evidence given at the Madlanga Commission and the Parliamentary Ad Hoc Commission, all of that evidence is driving towards one common denominator, and that is the protection of crime intelligence. And what a fantastic job is being done by crime intelligence, and how good they are at their work under Kamalu. He keeps quiet about all the bad things. The fact that in the PKTT, there are members in the PKTT who are soliciting bribes. He's 100% quiet about that. He's kept quiet about the fact that Kamalo sent his friend, who was promoted under his watch to the rank of Major General, sent his friend on a junket to Japan at cost to the taxpayer. He keeps quiet about the fact that Lushaba, the chief finance officer, in other words, the gatekeeper of this 600 million rand a year budget, uses slush fund. We call it a slush fund now. I think it's common cause that it's a slush fund. And he uses that slush fund money to hire a prostitute. And when she puts a Mickey Finn in his drink and he falls asleep, she makes off with his cash, his laptop computer, which is a crime intelligence state-owned laptop computer, and his state firearm. And then he opens a criminal docket at Valera Police Station, and he lies in the criminal docket. He said that he went to sleep and he left the window open, and when he woke up, his laptop and firearm were gone. That was a blatant lie. So then what he does, he gets a couple of his employees, senior cops, by the way, to go out, a colonel and a captain, to go out, trace this woman and get his laptop and gun back. Whether they got the cash back, I don't know. But they went out, they traced her, they got the weapon and they got the laptop back. Now, then what they did, they went to Valera Police Station and they got the investigating officer of the docket and they allowed the investigating officer, or they forced the investigating officer to allow them to put post-dated or predated, backdated statements into the docket about, actually, you know, I don't need the matter enclosed. I found my laptop and firearm. The whole thing was fraud. Needless to say, Lushaba gets arrested and the three cops that assisted him recover the firearm and the laptop, they also get arrested. And then what happens in January this year, based on information I'd received in November and December last year, I set up and I had a meeting with the OIGI, that's the Office for the Inspector General of Intelligence, and I handed them a dossier that I put together. And that dossier clearly showed that the slush fund, the crime intelligence slush fund of 600 million rand a year, it was a piggy bank for senior cops in the police. And I did that in January this year. Now, at that stage, I hadn't linked anything to do with Nkunazi to that, nothing at all. But what I had done is I picked up links between Nkunazi and prior events that took place. And I'm going back to the period of 2012 when he was acting chief of police. He appointed Masemola as the acting head of crime intelligence. And they, between them, took 35 million rand of taxpayer funds from crime intelligence. And they bought 35 million rands worth of luxury cars, and they were shared out amongst the senior hierarchy of the police. In fact, I think there was a Mercedes ML350 that went to the then Minister of Police, Nathi Mtetwa, the fellow that jumped out of the hotel window last week. God rest his soul. So you had this situation where I put all those links together and I hand that file to OIGI. I simultaneously handed a file to IDAC. OIGI, my understanding, is that OIGI subsequently produced a dossier. They did their own investigations. They would have access to things that I would not have access to. They did their own investigations, and they recommended criminal charges against Masemola, Lushaba, Kumalo, and they filed that criminal charges with IDAC. Now, I don't know what's happened to that. I understand IDAC have been investigating it. But in the meantime,
who is IDAC?
IDAC. In the Investigative Directorate Against Corruption. If you have to say that every time you say it, it gets your tongue twisted. So I just call them IDAC. Now, what happened was I also notified OIGI about, in fact, you interviewed me in the first week of January this year about the parachuting in of a 29-year-old administration lady from BMW who came into crime intelligence as a brigadier, leapfrogging police officials that had been on the job for 30 years, and now they have to report to this wet behind their ears, no knowledge of police brigadier coming in at a salary of 1 million rand a year. So I also reported that to OIGI. They also handed a folder to IDAC, and I believe that the MP, Mr. Adams, I think is a member of parliament, I believe he also opened a criminal docket which found its way to IDAC. So IDAC obviously carried out their own investigation and they arrested five generals and two brigadiers. And a few days after they made those arrests, I was waiting to hear from Masemola that he'd suspended them all, but he didn't. So I had my attorney send a letter of demand to him on the 1st of July. And on the 1st of July, we demanded that these five generals and two brigadiers be immediately suspended. And if they weren't, we'd bring an urgent application to have them suspended. And we got a reply the same day signed by Masamola saying that he was dealing with the matter and he will deal with it properly in terms of the police regulations. So it was a fob off, what I call a fob off letter. He fobbed us off with this. And now on legal advice, we decided that it would be impossible to bring an urgent application because the court would say, well, we're jumping the gun. He's going to take action against them. Meanwhile, he took no action against
them. Without getting into more of the detail, why is it, just bottom line it for us, why is General Mkhwanazi having a go at you? Why is he calling you an agent? And why is he suing you?
Well, we're suing him now because of his recent conduct. So we've called, you know, he thinks he can play poker with me. He's going to come unstuck. We've seen his 5 million and we're raising him another 5 million. So we're telling him we want 10 million. If he wants to play games, I'm good at it. I've played these games for many, many years. I have no motive whatsoever other than to live in a country where the crime levels are not what they currently are. And if you look at his conduct, it's only driven because I'm exposing the dark underbelly of the South African Police Service, which includes all of his friends in crime intelligence. You just have to analyze what he's told the Madlanga Commission and Parliament, and that is that actually the sun shines out of Kamalo's backside, and nothing can be further from the truth. And I think what we've seen up to now is we've seen Mkhwanazi giving his version of events. I'm applying to appear before the Madlanga Commission and give my version of events. And in the meantime, what I haven't done, I haven't called for the people of this country to take the law into their hands and do something drastic against Mkhwanazi like he has done with me. I'm not going to play that game of tit for tat. His game has resulted in social media attacks on me. Fortunately, I don't read social media, so I had one of my staff scan through social media and list all the things that are said on social media by people who I would describe as Mkhwanazi cult followers. And these cult followers say the following: O'Sullivan is a Mossad agent. O'Sullivan is part of the CIA. O'Sullivan is a MI6 spy. O'Sullivan is an Australian spy. O'Sullivan is a double agent working undercover for the Russians. O'Sullivan is an Israeli and not a South African. O'Sullivan is a Zionist and an apartheid Israeli agent. O'Sullivan has three passports. Actually, they're wrong there. I've got four. O'Sullivan is bringing intelligence gathering devices into South Africa. O'Sullivan is behind the police capture saga. Senso Mchunu was just taking orders from O'Sullivan. Now, for the record, I've never even met or spoken to Senso Mchunu. O'Sullivan must approve before you can be appointed as police minister. O'Sullivan is appointing commissioners and others for Ramaphosa. O'Sullivan is controlling the government and law enforcers. O'Sullivan is a handler of Ramaphosa. I mean, this is getting hilarious. O'Sullivan is Ramaphosa's wingman. O'Sullivan is one of the big five cartel checklist. O'Sullivan is working with the cartels. O'Sullivan is part of the ANC criminal enterprise. O'Sullivan is the CEO of the mafia state that is South Africa. O'Sullivan accepted payments from Kat Matlala. I don't even know who the guy is until I read about him in the newspapers. ANC criminal politicians gave O'Sullivan power. O'Sullivan is a Pala kingpin. Again, I only found out about Pala when I read about it in the newspapers. O'Sullivan is the largest investor in Centrelina, which is known for child sex abuse. Oh, this is getting tricky now. O'Sullivan sources children and drugs. O'Sullivan is a drug dealer. O'Sullivan is a fugitive from Ireland. Now, this is the result of a lieutenant general in the police using his cult following to attack somebody who I have a record going back to the year 2000, a very clear record of 25 years of carrying out pro bono investigative work in South Africa for the benefit of South Africa as a whole. I have never, ever, ever been engaged in any criminal activity whatsoever. I've had my offices raided by dirty cops. I've been arrested multiple times by dirty cops. And I now have a dirty cop telling the people of the country they must take the law into their own hands and deal with me. So what we actually need to do is sit back and watch, because the Nkunasi cult, including his accomplices, who are giving evidence at the Madlanga Commission and the Parliamentary Ad Hoc Committee, I'm not sure when they will finish giving all their evidence, but then it's going to be the time of all the accused. So you have this team of accusers, and then all the people they are accusing will have their chance to come and explain the truth with the facts. And I have the facts. I have the evidence. I don't make outlandish claims that I cannot prove. Everything that I've claimed, I have the evidence, the physical evidence of it, and I will be tabling it. And during the coming week, I'll be calling a media conference to actually launch that document. And the people will be fairly, fairly shocked when they realize that the emperor actually is walking around naked.
Comes across very well, Paul. He's measured, he's calm, he's humble, not just in the Madlanga Commission and at the ad hoc parliamentary committee, but in other engagements that I've seen. So what's gone wrong here? Has he been the front man for these dirty cops that in crime intelligence? Or what's your reading of a guy who business in KZN says is actually doing a good job and is a good person?
Well, he may be doing a good job in some aspects, but what you have to do is go behind the job that he's doing. What about the company that he has? I've not heard any mention of that, but last year on June the 26th, and this is something that we should invite him to come on air and explain, he bought a company called Dream Deal Trading and Investments Pty Limited. Now, what's a career policeman doing buying a company called Dream Deal Trading and Investments Pty Limited? He bought it in June last year, and the person he bought it from is a convicted fraudster. I've got the case number. I've got all the evidence. I've spoken to the investigating officer to confirm that it's not a mistake on the criminal system. This person was convicted in 2009 under Pretoria Central Cas 779 of 5/2009. He was convicted of fraud. And last year in June, he sold a company called Dream Deal Trading and Investments Pty Limited. He sold it to Nkunasi. Now, what is all that about? How does that fit in? Somebody needs to explain that. Why a career cop needs a company called Dream Deal Trading and Investments. And I note for the record that he doesn't make any disclosures. He doesn't take either the Madlanga Commission or the Parliamentary Committee into his confidence there. And when he gave evidence to the Madlanga Commission, quite funnily, he laughs and jokes about how he had to speak to his wife and say, what is it with Louis Vuitton? How much is it? But what he didn't do, he did not deny receiving a Louis Vuitton bag from a police supplier. And surely that's what he should have done, rather than joking and looking up into the sky while he's joking about asking his wife how much a Louis Vuitton bag costs. Of course she wouldn't know, because the bag was given by a police supplier. It wasn't paid for. So those are the sort of things that the people need to get answers to. And to jump on this bandwagon of taking drastic action, taking the law into their own hands, and making all these false allegations about me, there's no evidence. If he's got evidence, let him bring that evidence and put it on the table. He hasn't got any evidence. And the reason he hasn't got any evidence, Alec, is because I do everything above board. Last year, I paid $3 million in taxes. How can I pay $3 million in tax if I'm a criminal?
Let's deal with the accusations against you. The first is that you did a whitewash on Parler Parler. I know we had the conversation here on BizNews TV where you said you'd investigated it, and you put the evidence down there.
I didn't investigate it. I only found out about Parler Parler after I read about it in the media. Nobody came to me and said, can you investigate Parler Parler? But once I read it about it in the media and I saw these allegations of that ex intelligence guy, you know, all these problems stem from intelligence. What was his name? Arthur Fraser, that's it. Arthur Fraser made allegations that I tracked down the people and helped arrest them or kidnap them and torture them. I never knew anything about Parler Parler until I read about it in the media, which was, I think, 2 years after the event. So I had no knowledge of it whatsoever. I knew nothing. So that's that allegation out of the way. What else is it you want to...
What about the interview that you had with an SABC reporter who apparently was pressing all your buttons and then you put the phone down on her?
No, what happened was I explained to her that if she wouldn't listen and let me speak, I'm going to discontinue the conversation. And she wasn't pressing any buttons of mine. That was all to do with... So as a result of the conduct of SABC, I don't even give them interviews anymore because they have their version of events that they want to put across. And it's journalists manipulating the news I wouldn't be at all surprised if that particular journalist isn't on the payroll of Arthur Fraser or the Secret Service or something like that. You have this situation where SABC run their own agenda. And their agenda at that moment in time was clearly to implicate me in something to do with Parler Parler, and I told them to get lost.
The relationship that you have with Cyril Ramaphosa, again, it was, as you say, it came up in social media. What is that relationship?
I don't have any relationship with Cyril now. Many, many years ago, Cyril's children and my children used to play 10-pin bowling together. And Cyril and I would often meet at Wanda's place in Soweto, and we'd have a drink. In those days, Cyril was, I think he was a general secretary of the trade union or something like that. And then after the 1994, Cyril became a businessman. And as a businessman, I used to meet with him regularly. He was running a company called Velapanda. Or was it Velapanda? No, I think that was Tokyo.
That was Tokyo, yeah.
Anyway, he was running a corporation, JCI, I think it was, okay? And I would meet with him on business things, and we would meet on that basis. I recommended a guy for he was looking to headhunt a person. I recommended him. When this whole Parler Parler thing came up, there was a guy in Parliament who alleged that Cyril had been received. Oh, it wasn't Parler Parler. What was the name of that? The Watson fellow. What was the name of that company?
Basasa.
Yes, Basasa. The Basasa guy, Watson, he drove his car into a column next to Oatambo Airport. Well, when all that was going on, we had a guy stand up in Parliament and say that Cyril had received donations from Basasa. I did a quick investigation there, and I found that actually they'd money washed or laundered the money and made a donation to the CR17 campaign. And I made a recommendation to Cyril's son, who'd received that money. And his name's Andile. And my recommendation to Andile was, A, to get the money and put it into the lawyer's trust account and make the SARS people, because they'd attached all the assets of Basars, make SARS aware of the fact that the money was in the lawyer's trust account. And I also said that if I was in his shoes, I'd pull out of Basars. I have nothing to do with them, which he duly did. So that was my only involvement there. I had nothing else to do with it.
Sinead Motti.
So Motti has a group of companies. Now, way back when, I'm going back probably 15 years ago, I'd indicated that he was involved in a serious crime, which involved shooting up a car by certain individuals. And it turned out later when the evidence, he was invited to give his version of events at the time. He refused. The state decided to arrest and prosecute him. Once they decided to arrest and prosecute him, his lawyers gave his version of events, and the state withdrew the charges against him. He just happened to be in the wrong place with the wrong person at the wrong time. I had no further dealings with him after that. And then in 2015, I had lent a sum of money. I think it was about, I can't remember the exact figure. I'd lent 6 million, I think, or 5 million rand to a company, or the owners of a company called Old Fashioned Fish and Chips. And as security for that loan, I took all the shareholding in that company called Old Fashioned Fish and Chips. And I made that loan. And after making the loan, they had to pay it back over a certain period of time. And if they didn't pay it back, I could sell the shares. I could sell that company because I took 100% of the shares in the company. And at the time, I think they had 80 plus minus 80 or so fish and chip shops around the country, plus a distribution center in Alberton. So what I did, when it became apparent that they weren't going to pay the money back, I started shopping around to see if I could find a buyer for the company. And I found the buyer for the company. They were going to pay me 20 million and I was going to hand the company over to them. I notified the people that owned the company that I intended to sell the company if they didn't pay me by whatever the date was. And I think 5 days later, I got a phone call from Motti and he asked me, listen, I'm interested in buying that company from them. I'm going to buy it from them and they're going to pay you back your money. He said, but I'll need the shares. I said, well, unless I've been paid back my money, I'm not parting company with the shares. He came to an arrangement with them where he would pay me the balance that was still owing at that stage, which I, from memory, it's a long time ago, but about 10 or 12 years ago. I think it was 10 years ago. The amount I was owing at that stage was about 4.5 million. So they came to an arrangement. He paid me the 4.5 million and I handed the shares back to them. And then whatever business arrangement he had with them, I have no knowledge of that. They got on with that and that was fine. About a year later, Motti asked me if I would be interested in carrying out some forensic work for one of his companies. A mandate was signed. The forensic work was carried out. We got paid. He's not a criminal. Everyone says he's a criminal, but if I look on our records, we don't work for criminals. So if a person convicted of fraud or convicted of some other serious crime, we won't provide any services to them. However, he's never been convicted of anything. I'm satisfied that he's not running a criminal empire, as some people would say. If he was running a criminal empire, I wouldn't be rendering forensic services. From time to time, we get a request to carry out an investigation. Sometimes I'll be involved. Sometimes I won't. It'll be some of my staff. But the reality is, I have a business called O'Sullivan Brosnan & Associates, We're a firm of forensic investigators and certified fraud examiners, and we make most of our money from investigating fraud. And the reality is that all the profits, 100% of the profits from that company, go into Forensics for Justice. So having that income funds the work that we do in catching people like Bashlami, Lucky Montana. I spent a year and a half on that case. I produced a docket for the Lucky Montana case, which we then handed over, and we opened criminal charges against him. How he hasn't been arrested and charged up to now, God above only knows. But the reality is that work that we did was funded through the profits of O'Sullivan Brosnan Associates, like all the other work that Forensic Justice do. Am I MI6 agent? Well, what a lot of rubbish. I worked for the British government 50 years ago, let's say 45 years ago, something like that, a long time ago. Now, I wasn't the work I was doing for the British government. I wasn't a spy. My work was counter-espionage and counter-intelligence and counter-insurgency. I was not involved in spying. I've never been a spy in my life. So this allegation that I'm an agent for Australia or Israel or Russia or Britain, you know, it's a load of codswallop. It's absolute rubbish, and there's no evidence. And all these allegations are without evidence. When I make allegations, I have evidence. I don't just suck it out of my thumb and say, "Here, this is what's going on."
But it's exciting to the public that there is this guy who's saying there's the Big Five, and they've now arrested Cyril's nephew. Big names are being involved, and so on. Is there anything in your mind that Mkhwanazi has said which actually is true, which will be helping the anti-criminal situation?
I think a lot of what he says is true. But when you take the truth and you sprinkle it with lies, you can't expect the lies to be accepted in the same way as the truth. Clearly, there's no doubt that some of these people are out and out hoods, thugs. How can you have this fellow, what's his name, Kat Matlala, with all these millions and millions of rand? Where the hell does he get all that money from? You know, you just wonder, hell's bells, where's that money coming from? And this other chap, what's his name, Momela, is that the one that's a nephew of Cyril? I'm not sure. The video of the Lamborghinis and whatnot being taken out of his Sandhurst home, that home is probably paid for out of taxpayers' money. So it's damn right. It's good that these things are being exposed. And I won't take that away from him. But I don't think he exposed it. He's just publishing it. I think it's been exposed by the people under his command who happen to be in the right place at the right time. But what they don't explain properly is why the contract with the police and Matlala wasn't cancelled last year already when somebody flagged it and said, hey, this guy shouldn't be having this police contract. They waited several months, I think 4 months, before they cancelled it. And that was only after the minister had said, listen, that contract needs to be reviewed. Now, I don't know this fellow Ntunu from a bar of soap. I don't know Brown Magotsi from a bar of soap. I don't know Kat Malala from a bar of soap. I've never met and had any dealings with any of these people. What's his name? Mkhwanazi gets up to Parliament and says, I'm a friend of Shadrach Subir. I'm not his friend. I've met him lots of times because of the position he holds. When we identify corrupt cops and corrupt prosecutors, who do you think we go to? We go to senior officials in the police. And in the case of I think it was last year, we had a senior state advocate and a lieutenant colonel in DPCI who were in cahoots together, effectively nullying fraud dockets in return for payments. So we went to see Shadrach Sabir. I took my team of people. We sat in his office. Occasionally, I would say we, for every three or four times we meet in his office, there's probably one or two times that he will meet in our offices. I've never met him outside of work. I've never had any supper with him. I've never gone to a bar for a drink with him. I've never done any social activities with him. I don't even know where he lives. I don't know his wife's name or his children's name, assuming he has a wife and children. I know nothing of any of those details. It's purely a professional engagement with him. I have no knowledge until I read about it in the media of this 121 dockets, which were allegedly taken from A to B and back to B or somewhere else. I have no knowledge of it. Nothing. Not involved. Never been involved.
Well, I was sent a WhatsApp by somebody where you were engaging with Brown Mokgosi. And the reason someone sent it to me was that you had proposed to him that he talks to me or the SABC or something along those lines. I can't remember the exact number.
He contacted me and I said to him, you need to make your version of events public. And I asked him if he would speak to you. And then I sent the message. I've got it on my phone where I asked him.
But it's interesting that that somebody found that message and sent it to me.
No, I sent the message to you, Alec. I can read you the message now. And I said to you, will you like to see their daddy?
You did. But somebody else sent it to me with the almost accusing Paul O'Sullivan of being a friend of Brown Mokgosi. That's where I'm coming from.
Never met the man.
What about Diane Kola Barnard? What is her situation here? Because she's also now being accused.
Absolutely nothing wrong. I'm just looking at my messages. I took a screen dump of the messages I sent to you. And you wrote back and you said, this is more Chris's side of things. Okay. So I then forward the messages to Chris Stein. And if I look at my messages with this guy, because he approached me, he approached me only 2-3 weeks ago. In fact, he approached me in September. And then, I'm just looking for the message. And I said to him, he sends a message to me. He sends this message to me. I'm going to play it for you now. And you can actually hear what he says. And I didn't solicit this.
No, yes, I have noted the utterances of the Secretary General of the AAC, Comrade Figile Mbalula, about my membership of the African National Congress. I am, of course, a member of the AAC in good standing, and I've decided that I should come out and really give the nation a proper context as to what is causing all these commotions, and that I can also confirm that the Brown Mokgosi is not the target. There is a target. This whole thing of Figile Mbalula coming out with her gun blazing on me about my membership of the AAC, which has nothing to do with my Atlanta commission. I thought the Aldram rule, which he referred to, applies across the board. Especially when in the African National Congress, as a very deep-rooted democratic organization. I wish we take the country to confidence and close this matter way forward. Thank you so much.
Now, I got that message from him. I wrote back to him. I said, okay, can I help you to arrange to speak to someone such as Alec Hogg, which everyone in business listens to, and perhaps a one-on-one interview with a journalist from News 24. He writes back and said, yes. So I then forward this message to you. You say I should hand it to Chris Stein. I send it to Chris Stein. And for some reason, best known to him, I don't know, he doesn't speak to Chris Stein. I forward it to a journalist. He calls me uncle, by the way. I don't know the guy from a bar of soap. And then I say to him on Monday this week, good morning, I've sent them both your number. You should expect a call. Then I said the following, because people call him, but he doesn't answer. I said the following to him. I spent time to set you up with good people to give your version of events, yet you choose to ignore them. Is there a reason for that? I said, it's only a matter of time before the police grab you and your devices. And then he sends me a message. When I try to look at it, it's been deleted. So, and that was the last communication I had with him. So, you know, I'm not involved. I don't know the man, never met him, never spoken to him even on the phone. It's only messages. When I phone him to try and speak to him, he doesn't answer. So, you know, you've got a lot of conspiracy theorists out there if they think I'm involved with Gotsi.
What do you make of all of this, Paul? We're confused. The nation's confused. The nation's saying, here's this guy that we believe to be incorruptible, i.e. you, who's put a couple of police commissioners behind bars. He's always been a straight shooter. He's always been prepared to put his own neck on the line in the interests of the country. That's the perception that the BizNews tribe have of you. Now you've got this new hero saying he's a bad person. And of course, what I thought was very ironic was that the question about the agent was leveled by the leader of the Economic Freedom Fighters, who's once before accused a BBC TV reporter of an agent. Let's help us out here.
Julius Malema said to, because I've had it transcribed, if you wait for the Madlanga Commission to transcribe what's going on, you'll be waiting forever. So I've used my own funds to have the discussion transcribed. Malema says, so will it be correct to say Mr. Paul O'Sullivan is one of the quote-unquote rogue elements that are destabilizing SAPS and wanting to capture every senior police officer at SAPS? And if you don't cooperate, he starts engaging in blackmailing activities. Mkunazi says, with no doubt. Now, what? I've never had any dealings with Mkunazi. Until he got up on the 6th of July, dressed in paramilitary uniform with a paramilitary band behind him, I never had any knowledge about who he was and what he was up to. I was aware at that stage, though, that he was on the periphery of monies being spent from the Crime Intelligence Slush Fund. And that is something that we have to get to the bottom of. And if you look at his whole theme, the narrative that he comes across at Madlanga and Parliament, is that the sun shines out of crime intelligence backside. Things had never been so good. Let me tell you, before Kumalo was head of crime intelligence, he was head of crime intelligence in KZN. He was a major general. Now, he was head of crime intelligence in KZN from 2018 to 2022. What happened between 2018 and 2022? Crime intelligence in KZN collapsed. because in July 2021, 350 people were murdered in a 10-day period, and 100 billion rands worth of damages were done, and crime intelligence had no inkling that it was going to happen. And the crime intelligence officers, while that was going on, were suntanning on the pool deck at the Oyster Box Hotel in Umhlanga. So the reward for the breakdown of crime intelligence in KZN in 2021 results in 2022 of Kamalo being promoted to Lieutenant General and given the job as Divisional Commissioner of Crime Intelligence. What has he done since then, other than spend 600 million a year secretly, of which last year 120 million was blown on properties? Now, those properties were sold. I've gone back and I've got the details. Those properties, each and every one of them, were sold at the asking price. Alec, I own a lot of property. In January this year, I sold a property I bought in Houghton in 2020 or 2019. I bought a property in Houghton for 12.9 million. I pay cash for it. I pay cash for all my properties. I needed some cash. I sold that property this year for 7.5 or 7.7 million rand. I had it on the market for 15 million rand. Now, nobody today, except people using the proceeds of crime, pay the asking price for property because the property market in South Africa has collapsed. So how on earth do they go along and spend money at the asking price without negotiating the price down? And then they end up paying the estate agent's commission as well, and they pay transfer duty and everything. They spent 120 million rand. And now all those properties that they bought, they're not supposed to buy properties. Never are they supposed to buy fixed property. They move in, and one of the properties is in Durban. Actually, two of the properties are in Durban, in KZN. And those properties are tenanted. There are multiple tenants in those properties with outstanding leases. They can't just cancel the lease and put them out, which means crime intelligence have now become property investors, where they pay the full asking price, and now they become property managers, where they're managing these properties. And now the whole world knows where these properties are, which means they have to sell them. That's why they're supposed to rent properties. So if the location gets compromised and they can no longer use it as a safe house or a safe office, they can just tie up the lease and move on instead of owning fixed properties. So somebody needs to explain why they spent 120 million out of the slush fund. Somebody needs to explain why they hiring people, parachuting them in at very senior rank. And instead of doing all these explanations, they have all these criminals in crime intelligence. They don't need to worry because Masemola doesn't suspend them. And we have Mkunasi saying they shouldn't be getting prosecuted. Why not? They've stolen money. Why should they not be prosecuted? So Mkunasi needs to explain why is he supporting these criminals in crime intelligence. And when he can give that explanation, maybe when he's finished, him and his accomplices, when they've finished making all their accusations with no evidence, he hasn't tabled a shred of evidence, not a single iota of evidence that I'm a secret agent or I have these narratives that he wants to imply against me, that I'm a criminal. I'm not involved in crime. If I was involved in crime, I wouldn't be paying my taxes, and I pay my taxes. They audit me regularly because we have dirty cops running off to SARS and telling them that I'm fiddling this and I'm fiddling that. When I buy a property, they want to know where the money comes from, and I show them. I bring the money in from overseas. When I came to this country, I didn't come here as a plumber or an electrician. I came here as an investor. Now, I have no motive whatsoever, none at all, to engage in criminal activity.
That question by Malema to Mkhwanazi, do you think it was choreographed?
No doubt. And I think the reason it was choreographed is because Malema himself is a convicted criminal. You know, we have very short memory. That a few days after he's convicted of a very serious crime, by the way, he stands up in Parliament and starts to deflect attention to others and gives opportunities for others to, you know, we have to remember a few years back, it was probably 6 or 7 or 8 years ago, Malema was going on about the British government and Maggie Thatcher and British spies. He spoke to the BBC very rudely when they interviewed or tried to ask him questions. And he called them bloody spies, you know. I don't talk to bloody spies, you know. So he's got this bee in his bonnet. I'm stating categorically, 100%, I'm not spying for anybody. I'm not an agent for anybody. I have better things to do with my life. When the truth finally comes out, when the accusers have finished giving their version of events, the people they are accusing are going to come onto the platform and give their version of events with evidence, by the way. I'm going to produce the evidence. I'm not going to make reckless statements. I'm not going to accuse Mkhwanazi of being a spy or anything else. I am going to accuse him, because he's given me the evidence, of supporting criminals that are running the crime intelligence division of the police that eats 600 million rand a year of taxpayer funds. And that 600 million is over and above the salaries that all those police officials get paid. That 600 million is meant to be used for paying informers that will deliver information that enables them to intercept criminals. The reality of it is that crime intelligence is broken. It's broken, and it's been broken for 20 years because of corruption. And the center, the core of that corruption, is this so-called slush fund, which 12 years ago was 98 million. Today, it's 600 million per annum. That's an increase of 500%. The cost of living in the same 12 years has gone up by approximately 104%. So how do they justify a 500% increase in crime intelligence slush funds without a concomitant drop in crime?
Well, just to close off with, Robert McBride from IPID, there are accusations that you handled him as well.
Well, that was the accusation of Pashlani as well. Pashlani used to refer to IPID as OPID. You know, what happened there, actually? I did interviews with you in London because they came, they dragged me off a plane. They took all my passports. Well, some of them. They took some of my passports. They dragged me off a plane with my children. They assaulted me in front of my children. And then they told me I have to stay within Gauteng. I must report at the police station twice a day. And then they told me, oh, by the way, what was all this for? They wanted to charge me with treason. Who was involved? Mokoteri, Nklemeza, Munu, Pashlani, all the criminals in the police that I was going after. So by the time they'd done that, I'd already opened a criminal case against Pashlani. He didn't know it. I'd been to IPID and I'd opened a criminal case. At that stage, IPID was captured. Because in 2015, Anwar Dramat, Shadrach Sabir were suspended and dismissed from the Hawks for being involved in this so-called extradition cover-up. And then IPID By the way, the minister then was Natyantetwa. Hmm? You can work out what went on there. He wanted to neutralize it. It was part of the capture. I wrote a document on it I called Joining the Dots about how they captured the criminal justice system. I'll be presenting that same document to the Mad Langer Commission 10 years later. But what they did was they suspended Robert McBride and they neutralized because they had an acting head. Everywhere they had an acting, this acting head of Hawks was Nklemeza, acting head of the police was Pashlani, an acting head of ARPID was another fellow. I can't quite remember his name, a very difficult to pronounce name. I opened a case with this acting head of DPCI, of ARPID, against Pashlani. What did he do? In March of 2016, he gave a copy of the docket to Pashlani with all the evidence. So on the 1st of April 2016, I was arrested without warrant. They'd been to a magistrate to get a warrant and they were chased away. So they just decided to arrest me anyway. And they arrested me and dragged me off a plane with my two minor children, one 8 and one 9 years old. And these two little girls were beside themselves to see their daddy being handcuffed and assaulted in front of them. And I fought back. I decided this isn't going to happen. I fought back and I went after them. I then went to Helen Sussman Foundation, and I funded the Helen Sussman Foundation with a substantial amount of money to bring an application to have Robert McBride's suspension overturned, and he was reinstated back at IPID. Now, in addition to putting money in myself, I canvassed donations from other business people that I knew that were comfortable or well off. And together we pulled enough money to bring the necessary court applications, and McBride got his job back. The week after he got his job back, I met with him at IPID and I said, come, we've got a corrupt chief of police now. What are you going to do about it? And he appointed a task team and they got on with it and dealt with it. And what I did in the first few weeks of that task team's activities, I sat with them on a regular basis and gradually handed over all the evidence that I had gathered over the previous year in order to leapfrog them into the position where they were then able to go after Pashlani. And Pashlani, as you know, was arrested and charged with corruption and is still on trial now. I think he's facing at least 400 or 500 million rands worth of corruption charges. And that was Paul O'Sullivan, by the way, that put all that together with IPID. Of course, I put it together and gave it to IPID. I don't have a power of arrest. I can't go knocking on Pashlani's door and arrest him. IPID had to take that over. I couldn't take that to DPCI because DPCI was owned. The whole of the criminal justice system had been captured. So what did I do? In 2019, between 2018, after I beat all these fake charges they brought against me to shut me up, I then spent from 2018 to 2020 putting together a systematic document showing how the criminal justice system had been captured by criminals. And most of them are still there. And I tabled this with the Sondo Commission. And what happened? In October, before the Sondo Commission tabled its final report, I forget the year now, but I think it was 2021 or 22, the Sondo Commission announced that they're no longer going to investigate the criminal justice system. And I said, that's chaos. The capture of the criminal justice system happened before state capture. They captured the police and the prosecution service so that they could get away with their crimes. And that capture hasn't been uncaptured. Some of them have been criminally charged, but there's still lots of criminals in the police. So I decided I'm going to continue. And I even wrote to Kali Kirill of AfriForum and Wayne Duvenek of Outer and requested them, would they be interested in joining me in putting together an application for a judicial commission of inquiry into the capture of the criminal justice system? And sadly, both wrote back and said that, somebody else would have to take that on. So I just kept at it. I kept hacking away at it, opening cases and bringing attention of this criminal capture of the police. And lo and behold, the good thing that came out of the 6th of July paramilitary media conference of Nkunazi, the only good thing that's come out of it, in my opinion, is we now have a judicial commission of inquiry. And if that judicial commission of inquiry does its work properly, all these crooks in the police will be gone, because I will be calling for a 10 to 15 year audit. Capture of the criminal justice system started under Sir Leby, and he was appointed in 2000. And between him and Pashlani, lots of people that aren't qualified to be policemen or women at all have been appointed. And we're not talking about constables. They got parachuted in at the rank of colonel or brigadier, in some cases, major general. Look at this fellow, Chamani. Chamani was Becky Celi's right-hand man in the Ministry of Police. And while Becky Celi was Minister of Police, he arranged with Masemola in January 2024 to appoint Chamani as a Lieutenant General in Police Head Office. And the man comes to work every day drunk on the salary that you and me and all the other taxpayers are paying. So Becky Celi, his right-hand man, is a Lieutenant General at the Head Office of Police, Advocate Chamani. And he was the guy that acted as Becky Celi's legal advisor when Becky Celi was charged with corruption over these Shabangu property acquisitions while he was chief of police. So you've had all these crooked chiefs of police, and they take one of these crooked chiefs of police by the name of Becky Celi, and for some reason, they make him the Minister of Police. And what does he do? He strong-arms Ramaphosa. He strong-arms him into appointing Masemola, a totally unsuitable person, as chief of police. Masemola was living beyond his means. I did a lifestyle audit on him 3-4 years ago. He was living beyond his means. Where was that money coming from? He strong-arms him into becoming commissioner of police. He becomes commissioner of police. And then what does Becky Celi do? He flies around the country in the police jet. The regulation says that civilians can't go in the jet. And he attends press conferences, the police press conferences. And when they ask questions, he talks as if he's a policeman. He says, no, we're going to arrest that person. No, minister, you're not arresting anybody. You don't have a power of arrest. He's talking on behalf of Masemola. And then he decides, before he gets wind of the fact that he's going to get fired by Ramaphosa and replaced by Mchunu. So before he gets fired, he tells Masemola, listen, this legal advisor of mine, he'll be unemployed when I'm no longer minister. Let's give him a job in the police. So they appoint him as a lieutenant general in the police. And that major general, I forget the name, the white lady that gave evidence at the Madlanga Commission, she reports to him. But he doesn't do any work. She does all the work. Now, the taxpayers paying that man $2 million a year. For what? So the rot is going to stop, and the Madlanga Commission is going to be the vehicle to stop it. And that's the only thing that I'm going to thank Nkunazi for.
Well, what an ironic end to a fascinating hour and a bit with Paul O'Sullivan. Ironic in that he did, on BizNews TV, on numerous occasions, say that we needed the Zondo Commission to investigate the criminal justice system. It didn't, but now he has his investigation. There's one last point that I'd like to leave you with. As a young reporter in a bygone age, your first duty was to go to the courts, and you were usually put in there for a period of at least 6 months. And the reason for that was that you realized you should never report on affidavits as fact, but to say this is one side of the story. So the other part of the court case, you can actually give the corresponding side. It appears to date that there's been a woeful absence of the other side to what is being alleged by General Mkhwanazi. We wait and watch, and Paul O'Sullivan with his 10 million rand lawsuit will be making sure that not only does he deliver his evidence to these various committees, but that he'll have his day in court as well. Paul O'Sullivan is the founder of Forensics for Justice. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.